This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. We are here every week, and we talk about subjects that we think are interesting and important and topical, and particularly of local interest when we can. And today I have the honor and pleasure of introducing you to one of our most important and well-known citizens here in Western New York, who also I have the pleasure of being a friend, having been a friend of for, I'm not going to say how many years. And I want to say that our guest today is an attorney, a well-known artist, a musician, and just an all-around fabulous, terrific person who actually, I just realized, not only all of that, but he actually was inducted into the Buffalo Hall of Fame as well as his other honors. And by now you might have guessed, this is like, what's my line? You might have guessed that we are going to talk today to Leroy C. Johnson. And we are so excited to have you here, Leroy. And I want to start out by telling you that the other day, I was at my friend Joan's house, and she just moved into a new home, and I was just in the hall, and I looked up, and I said, oh my God, that painting, Joan, is so fabulous. Where did you get that? It looks like it belongs in an art museum. And of course, it was an original Leroy C. Johnson. And so I am moving into a new home soon, next to near my daughter in Amherst. And guess what I am going to get for my new home, I hope. An original. Are you listening? Are you saying anything?
I'm sitting here listening.
But that
of
happened.
Course, so that I'd be honored to have a piece of mind in your home.
I would be so excited. So let me, in case there's anybody who is listening who does not know the background of Leroy C. Johnson, who is, I said, a local famous person. He is going to tell us a little bit about himself, and not only about his background, but the important part, really, I think, for all of our listeners is that he is a homegrown product, a person who grew up in public housing right here in Buffalo, New York, and has succeeded in becoming a world-famous, world-renowned artist and attorney and all, coming from right here in Western New York. I want you to tell our listeners how the struggle was and how it happened that you could start out, like I just said, here in Buffalo, New York, and end up kind of world renowned.
Well, thank you for the introduction, Judge.
You're welcome.
You don't mind if I call you Judge?
No, actually, just call me Penny, because we've been friends so long.
Yes, okay. I'm used to calling you Judge, though.
Okay.
So, but I'll call you Penny. Thank you for welcoming to your show and asking me to participate. I feel it's an honor to be here with you after having appeared before you so many times in the past, but this is special to be on your program. My background, people say, oh, you're from the projects and that. Some people think it's limiting, but of course I don't. I think it's something enhancing and bracing. It's something that makes you much more powerful, because you have to remember that the projects is a community. It's not just it's a home. It's home for many people. And it's a place where you learn and you grow and you become who you are. There's a lot of strengths and a lot of positives to the projects. The name, sometimes the innuendos and the indications are negative, but when you live there, you don't think of that. You don't. You just think about the relationships that you built and the things that were around you. I mean, if I told you the people who I grew up with, there's so many nationally and internationally famous people from Buffalo, from the projects.
Well, one of them is related to you.
One is my brother, Rick James.
We haven't mentioned that yet, but I'm leaving it up to you.
No, everybody in Buffalo knows that Rick is my brother. Rick is from there. You have Bob Lanier, who's Hall of Fame basketball player. You have one of the greatest people in radio, Frankie Crocker, is from there. You got our former FBI director, Bernie Talbert. You got, I mean, they just go on. Vanessa Williams' family is from there. I can go on and on and on with the people from the projects. And I don't think any of them were limited by the fact that they came from the project. I think they all embraced that, and they talk about it. I listened to Dave Chappelle talk about how all the famous rappers and all that were from a project. So he kind of embraced it. He said, but he's not from the project at all. He says, you know, nobody ever asked. He said, but, you know, I love the thought of it, but I don't know a thing about the projects. It was just a great experience, and I think it. There were so many things available to us. Their activities and challenges, a lot of challenges during my era, racism was prevalent. But none of that stopped.
You just named so many people, including your very own brother, Rick James, who, you know, surpassed and who excelled coming from the same background. I thought it was an interesting, I thought the story that I read in Super Lawyers was really interesting when it talked about how you had a childhood accident that helped forge your career in art. And I wanted to share that with our listeners. I thought it was really interesting.
Well, I do talk about it a lot because when I was 9 or 10 years old, I was involved in an accident, was hospitalized for quite a while, and I was bedridden for over 3 years.
A bike. You were on a bike.
I was on a bike, and I was hit by a truck, and almost everything in my body was broken. Some of the things had to be healed at separate times and then rebroken and then healed again. So, I mean, that was an experience, but I spent a lot of time on my back, and the only thing I could do was look up at the ceiling and watch television and paint, and not paint, but sketch. So I developed a perspective that was based on laying flat on your back and looking up at the ceiling. So everything, kind of the angles and you know, I'm always looking up at people, that kind of thing. So after a while, you get a different kind of perspective, and that's how you see things. And a lot of my work is reflects that that experience. But it gave me the opportunity that most kids, it took away a lot because I couldn't enjoy that part of my life with intermingling with kids. But educationally, I had a tutor for all those years. And having one-to-one is really something special because I was able to excel in academics and study habits and those kinds of things, which kind of lasted, pushed me all the way through high school. And then I had to get serious in college and law school.
All right, so let's progress from that. Definitely informed your art, or started your art career. I mean, your interest in art, right?
Yes.
Then somehow you ended up an attorney. How did that happen?
Well, there's more than one factor, but the main factor was that I had two prominent attorneys in my family, two cousins who were had opened up a law firm, and since I was the only young person of age who could really appreciate it, they took me to the opening, which was in Cleveland, Ohio. Our family's from Cleveland. So I always looked at that as being something very special. And they always looked out for me in terms of advising me about things. And one of my cousins argued Clark v. Terry before the Supreme Court and set that as a precedent. So that was always very powerful. And then because I watched TV a lot, I watched Perry Mason. and then the accident had a lot to do with it because I never felt that I received justice from the work that the lawyer did. He did some good work, but I never thought that I got the proper justice from his representation. So I thought that if I became a lawyer and helped my clients, particularly the young clients, I always fought for them and gave them more than they deserved, I thought. I mean, I gave them as much as I could get, and then I gave them a little bit more because I never took the standard fee from them. I took a lot less.
Because you wanted to do it as sort of as a mission, or you know, doing well, doing good, and helping other people.
Yes.
Which is, I'm not going to say this, but a lot of attorneys don't have the same goal in mind, and the public doesn't think of attorneys that way either. So you know, it's good they would have you as a role model for that. You had a very famous client, which helped you, I think, learn a lot about the law and management, and that, of course, was your brother, Rick James. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the relationship and how you were his manager and how you handled legal matters.
Okay, well, you know, I mean, not only was Rick my brother, but we were the closest friends in that. And although our journeys went separate paths, we came together in terms of what we were going to do in terms of helping each other. And he exploded at a particular point, and he needed someone that he could trust. So, but Rick wasn't the type of person who would like, okay, you're my brother, you're going to come and you're going to take over right away. No, you have to learn. So I went through a learning process with people in the industry. I was very fortunate to have mentors in almost every area that I could turn to. And I did that for about 6 months, and then I took over.
So, and then you step right in, yeah.
Yes.
What is it like managing, being a manager, an attorney, and a manager for a very high-profile person, and so dealing with the other people that you had to deal with in the business as well? What was it like?
Well, I mean, it's it's definitely an experience that most people will never understand. That when you're dealing with a superstar, that everybody's after the star, and they're going to come after you in whatever way. Most people are trying to disassociate you from them and put themselves in your position because it's such an important position. To deal with that, I had a lot of you have to do a lot of delegation and have good people around, and we had great people around us, and they were from Buffalo. Particularly Irv Schumann and as an attorney, advisor, friend, and the same applies to Dick Romer, who was our accountant, advisor, friend. And they actually came out on the road, and we were tremendously successful because of their involvement and advice. So it was interesting because you saw things you wouldn't see. You went to places that you never dreamed of, and you thought that you had done everything, and then other things would happen. I would never dreamed of going to the Oscars and the Grammys and American Music Awards and being on all the shows, Saturday Night Live, and meeting kings, queens, and blah, 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 and just flying around in a jet over hurricanes. I mean, you can't imagine the experiences that we have, sleeping on $1 million. I mean, those kinds of things you just don't do.
Go ahead, name drop. We're like, I'm starstruck here listening to this, and I'm sure our listeners are too. Tell me a little bit about like who you met that we would be really excited to think that you could meet in real life.
Well, I mean, at the time, it wasn't. We'll start with somebody like Eddie Murphy, but Eddie was just coming to be who he was. Robin Williams, Basquiat, Warhol.
What?
I mean, you name it, in whatever field, they were there. We partied at Studio 54 partied at the Hilton with Kathy Hilton and Contessa Hilton, and with the Prince of Saudi Arabia, and I mean, those doors were all open.
Was there a bad part to it also? I mean, how it affected Rick, for example?
Well, of course. I mean, there's the bad part, everybody knows, was the drugs, and everybody was always around trying to promote the drugs. I mean, that was a battle in itself. I mean, I had a force of people who tried to prevent it, but there was always someone who got through the cracks, and once you found out, then you had to get rid of them. But it was a never-ending battle, not only for that, but just because everybody was just trying to get to Rick, period. And Rick didn't want it. I mean, Rick would always say to me that I had a life where no one knew who I was, but I got the benefits of stardom, but not the the problems. Like, people weren't all over me. Rick couldn't go to bathroom. He couldn't go he had to give up things. He couldn't go shopping without taking 20 people with him to kind of protect him. He couldn't go to restaurants without having people crawl over him at the restaurants and that, and couldn't have real bona fide relationships because he didn't know if that person wanted him for him or wanted him for
his fame, his money, so, his, you know. Right.
And so it ended up with just a few very close friends. But most of his friends were what you might call equals in the business. For instance, Eddie, and he was close, kind of like the Timothy Hutton. I mean, stars would show up at my house by accident, my place, and you know, I open the door and here's Elizabeth Shue or the some crazy group, or and isn't this Rick's room? And I was like, no, you got the wrong room.
Well, luckily he had you all the time as a buffer and to protect him and to represent him. That made a big difference. If you just tuned in and you are listening to this conversation, I want you to know that we are talking, that you are listening, of course, to On Target, and I'm your host, Penny Wolfgang, and we are talking to Leroy C. Johnson, attorney, musician, artist, brother of Rick James, but that's the least of his accomplishments, as I've told you before. But it definitely informed a very important part of your life. Now, how did you get into, you know, what I call serious art, that you are, like, to become a famed artist? How did that happen?
Well, I always drew and I always painted, but it was a passion. It was something that inspired me. It wasn't something that I was trying to make a career out of it. Although I initially went to high school for commercial art and industrial design, and I didn't feel satisfied with that. So I went to Hutch Tech, which had a great program. It's just that I didn't think I was challenged enough. So I left, and I continued on my own. But I was never thinking about a career. And art is just that whenever something would happen, I would say, oh, well, let me paint this, and let me paint that. And after a while, when I got to Washington, I was around the museums a lot. My office was across the street from the National Gallery of Fine Art. So I spent a lot of time there for lunches and just looking and doing sketches and that kind of thing, but still not taking anything serious. I really didn't. And then I got involved, more involved in the art scene in Washington, on the administrative side. I was a co-founder of the Museum of the City of Washington. So a lot of the artsy things, people from the Corcoran and all the museums, and I was involved with them. And I always look at their work and I would say, I think I could do that. You know, but never really did it. But and then one day I just decided, I was in Paris, and you know, I kept photos and all that of my work, and there was a book on the table, and it had all the most famous galleries in Paris in it. And so I said, I'm just going to go take a look at these places. So I went to these places and I looked, and I started talking to the manager of one of the places, and I said, boy, that's interesting. I said, you know, I paint. And he says, oh yeah. He says, but we don't deal with people who are alive. And then the owner was listening. So he says, show me some of your work. So I showed him some of my work, and he said he loved it. I says, oh, wow. So he says, bring me 25 pieces. So I went back to the United States, and I did 25 pieces. But I'd actually been showing it a few places, but, you know, around Europe and that. And he enjoyed it. But this was one of the largest galleries in Paris on the most important street in Paris, on Saint-Honoré. And I drew his interest. And that changed a lot. And then I went off to Brazil, pumped up, very pumped up about things, and was going, doing some showings around Brazil to various galleries and that. And then I met one person, Abugias Nascimento, who changed everything in Brazil for me, because I didn't have to go around the galleries and that. He was a noted artist, civil rights leader, and the rest. And he had shows set up for him, and he invited me to be a part of all of his shows. So as a result, I ended up in shows throughout Brazil and most of the major institutions immediately. So, and even now, I just got back from two shows as part of his legacy, because he passed about over 10 years ago. But as a result, I just was at the Museum of Modern Art in Rio de Janeiro. I was at one of the largest museums in Brazil, in Ho Chi Minh in Minas Gerais. And I also shown at the National Archive there, and I mean, all over Brazil.
How would you describe your art?
I don't try to describe it. I let everybody else. I have a name for it. It's called electric primitive. And I call it electric primitive because the electric emphasizes the colorfulness. And primitive, just for me, means untrained, unschooled, and not following any of the established guidelines. So I coined that expression years ago, and I stick by electric primitive.
You know, it's very descriptive, because when I was telling you about seeing the piece in at Jones, it's very colorful, and it, you know, it has that primitive art type feeling to it. So that actually is an excellent description. We're talking about showing in Brazil and Paris and Europe, but I want you to tell our listeners that they can see your work soon right here in Buffalo.
Well, I'm having a solo exhibition at the Birchfield Penny coming up November 11th through March 26th. It will be my first major show in Buffalo, my hometown, which I'm very happy and proud, because usually you don't get something like this in your hometown. You actually go away and become famous, and you
that's
come back.
What, yeah, that's they always
what
say
I did, it's, you know, it's like
an expert is somebody that lives like 15 miles away, that
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah, so
people don't appreciate. That's why I'm so excited that we can talk about somebody, yeah, you know, hometown guy makes good.
But it's more than a show just for me. It's a show where I took on students to participate in the show. Four groups of students, close to 80 students, who work with me in terms of how my work would influence or inspire them to create work that talked about my work, kind of. And so I work with the Buffalo Public Schools and Buffalo Center for the Arts and Technology, Squeaky Wheel, and Just Buffalo, and all of them did some type of interpretation of the work, which is going to be included in the show. And I think that's the most important part, because I got a chance to give students something that you know, I never had, which is exposure on a major level, and hopefully they can take that from that level to any other level, if there is another level, mm-hmm, up. But I think the exposure is great.
Well, it's really amazing that you can be, you know, not just a mentor, but an example. I just have a few minutes left, and I didn't mean to ignore your 15th accomplishment career, which has to do with music. Because I did tell our listeners before that you were a member of the Hall of Fame, Buffalo Music Hall of Fame. How did that come about, and how did you become, among all of these other accomplishments, a proficient guitar player?
Luck.
This is luck that you're describing, Leroy.
I mean, to have, first of all, you have a musician brother. And,
true.
Rick used to come and visit me, and he left his guitar with me. So, you know, I knew nothing about guitar, so I started fooling around with it, and it took me a year to kind of figure out something, and then I was playing that for a while, and just happened to be in a music store and met one of the most famous guitar teachers in the world. And he said something to me that was very important in terms of knowledge. He asked me, how long did it take you to learn that? And I told him a year. So I could teach you that in 5 minutes.
Oh.
And then you can go somewhere else instead of fooling around for a whole year trying to learn something. I can teach you that. You can move on and move on and move on. And that was the start of my music, my career in music, which is writing. And it was mostly writing and just playing and studying for the most part.
Tell me how you fit this in. When do you have time to be an artist, be an attorney, be a musician, and breathe? I don't know. Are there enough hours in the day?
Oh, yeah. More than enough. I mean, I get up early in the morning, and I start with either music or art, and I always rush out to the house to either my office and the courtroom. See, if you have free time in a city like Buffalo, you're not stuck in traffic for 4 hours, and you're not stuck doing things, moving from one location to the other. So you have at least four to six hours a day of free time. That's enough to do anything, and it's particularly if you've been doing things for life. Art for me, I sit down on the weekends and I can just be inspired and just do multiple paintings at the same time. Guitar for me is relaxing and studying still. You know, the guitar is something that I'm not the kind of natural player. I can play and I can read and I can write. I can do complicated things with it, but I'm not the guy that just sits there and creates these incredible things like some people I know. I have to spend time at it. I don't have to spend that kind of time with art because I just go to the canvas and I create.
Well, my dear listeners of On Target, if you want to see some of the magical and fantastic artwork, go to the Birchfield Penny, and you can see the exhibit that we're talking about, and it's starting right here in Buffalo on November 11th at the Birchfield Penny Arts Center at Buffalo State College. I'll see you there, and maybe you'll be fortunate enough to see the artist himself, because he's so dedicated to Western New York, he's probably going to be there. So yes, you might have an opportunity to see him in person. Again, thank you so much, Leroy Johnson, for talking to us here on Target. And thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you've enjoyed our conversation and will join me again next week on Target. Have a good week and bye now.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.